Good afternoon and welcome to Central Coast Voices. I'm your host, Fred Monroe. I'm glad you're joining us today. Our goal is to bring you credible and valid information and insights from diverse members of our community. Central Coast Voices wants to address how today's choices will affect tomorrow's community, how we look at long-term ramifications of changes in our society, and frankly, sometimes how we look at lack of long-term ramifications of changes in our society or lack of change. We're going to talk today about a topic that is very important, and it oftentimes gets overlooked. But we're going to look at the raising awareness of hunger and how we feed people on the Central Coast when they are hungry. There are over 46,000 residents of San Luis Obispo County who are struggling with hunger. Unfortunately, the majority of those are among our most vulnerable populations, children and seniors. 40% of children and teens and 20% of our seniors often on a fixed income, really have a problem with hunger. Many of these people are working parents who are trying to choose between paying their utilities or buying groceries for their families. So today we're going to talk with people from the Food Bank Coalition of San Luis Obispo County, because the coalition believes everyone has the right to a nutritious meal, regardless of their financial resources. And the Food Bank makes it their mission to see that no one in the county goes hungry. The Food Bank, in my observation, tends to be one of the visible by their results organizations and invisible by how they bring it about. And today we're going to talk with folks from the Food Bank. We're going to talk with Andrea Kiesler, Director of Programs, and Tim Parker, who's the Director of Operations. We're going to discuss how their organization works, how they network with other community parties, partners in San Luis Obispo to alleviate hunger and build a healthier community. We're going to look at their expanding programs and the way they can advocate for both a less hungry community and resources to bring it together. I would mention real quickly that the Food Bank Coalition is probably one of those organizations that serves a tremendous number of us in ways that we never see, because it's kind of like the fact that you don't see the trucks that arrive at the supermarket that got there at 4 o'clock in the morning because you decided not to come to the market until a civilized hour. So the Food Bank oftentimes is under the radar. We can have you as part of the discussion today if you'd like to do that. The phone number is 805-781-3875. That's 805-781-3875, and you can be part of the discussion. I guess I'll just, what in the world is a food bank? It's a somewhat rhetorical question, I realize, because a lot of us understand what a food bank is, but there's also a lot of us that may know you exist but have no idea what you do or how you bring it about.
Well, physically, it looks like a large warehouse. In our case, it's a 20,000 square foot warehouse across the airport on Kendall Road. And I think in a broader sense, it's a network of people that donate food, that help us sort and order, pack orders, and then distribute food throughout the community.
Yeah, I think when I first started working at the food bank, for instance, I told one of my grandmothers and realized pretty quickly afterwards that the impression in her mind was like a closet at a church or something, you know, a pantry. And so food banks, as I've come to learn, they say you see one food bank, you've seen one food bank. They can be at all different scales depending on what a community needs. In our case, the food bank, as Andrew kind of mentioned, is a central facility where the idea would be that we can be sort of the hub for the county's food resourcing, and then from there help support all the different communities throughout the area.
Yeah. I have an interesting observation from my own experience. I realized that the food, I'd been to your building before. Actually, I've been to your building when it was in Paso Robles. I've not been to the one in San Luis Obispo. But I've been by the one in San Luis Obispo, and I've been by the one in San Luis Obispo at a time when which you weren't open, which meant I saw all the trucks that you have and the equipment that you have that is during your work day to some extent, because those are all out like part of a spider web all over the county. For a lot of us, we don't really see what you're doing, but it was a real appreciation to look at how many trucks there were, what there needed to be there to bring it about, and realize that when you're not open, those are sitting still, but when you're open, for a lot of the time, they're not there. They're off doing something else. What is the most common way you acquire commodities to share with the community?
I think everyone's familiar with food drives. Mm-hmm. So we acquire food through local food drives. We just had an enormous food drive in May called Stamp Out Hunger. And how many thousands of pounds of food did we receive in one
day? It
came
in to be about 65,000 pounds of food donated, all collected by our local postal carriers union in one day.
Mm-hmm. So that's a main way that we receive food, especially shelf-stable food.
Yeah, and I think there's several channels really that are worth mentioning here. We perform what we call grocery store rescues, and so that would be actually visiting physical retail locations where food that is otherwise going to be rotated off the shelf but is still, you know, fit for human consumption can be captured with the help of volunteers, sorted, and then distributed, through our different channels. We also really place a high emphasis at our food bank on distributing fresh produce. And one way that we help accomplish that is as a network of food banks statewide, we actually purchase produce in bulk. So we'll go to large growers and basically know that, you know, we'll commit to X number of truckloads a week of a given product, and then trucks are running up and down the state specifically to visit food banks and drop that off.
Yeah, mm-hmm. That brings up an interesting point, because I think a good portion of our listeners probably think that everything that you receive is donated, mm-hmm. But the ability to work with growers, we're in the middle of truly of, the produce basket of the world between here and Salinas is amazing. But some of those growers can offer you things at a better price than you could buy them through direct or through typical distribution of food channels that want to work with you.
Mm-hmm. I was going to mention that. I think some listeners would be surprised to know that we do purchase food. Tim mentioned that we purchase produce through the farm-to-family program. We also operate a cooperative program with our agency partners. So food that our agency partners use a lot of that we might not get in the quantity through donated product, we'll purchase in large quantity. We can get a very low price compared to, other opportunities, and then we offer that at cost to our agency partners to purchase from us.
Okay. So operationally, what's a day in the life of the food bank?
Depends on the day, I suppose. No, it's...
Pick your day.
Sure. It can certainly be variable, but generally speaking, we're pretty much in full operation 6 days a week, with Sunday being kind of the only day of closure where most staff are not working. And we are at various distribution sites throughout the county each day. So we have a rotating group of public distributions where we actually physically send staff, trucks, and food supplies and put on a public food distribution in every single community in San Luis Obispo County. So most of those sites will rotate through once or perhaps more than once a month. A given day for a warehouse staffer, for instance, you might show up and head out in a truck, pick up some rescues from a grocery store, come back to the warehouse, offload it with the help of our volunteers, load back up, and then maybe you're headed to Paso Robles or Shandon or Oceano or anywhere, really, and holding a public food distribution.
Yeah. I'm sure it comes up for you folks, and it comes up in when I was preparing for the program and going over the notes that you shared with us. There seems to be a recurring theme, for lack of a better way of putting it, that for a lot of people, because they don't see what you do, there's no problem. You know, when we look at the statistics, at the number of seniors that go hungry, the number of families that do not have enough available to make sure that their children and their whole family is fed well. But I would suspect that if I went out and just did a poll on the street, a good majority of the people would say they've never seen or have no idea where there is a food distribution operation going on in their community, whether it be Paso Robles, San Luis Obispo, Pismo Beach. You know, I guess the example might be, okay, pick Pismo Beach and tell me where you have direct contact with the community. And that may, I realize that may be providing food through another channel. You know, I realize that like Meals That Connect does an actual daily lunch program for mostly for seniors. But in those organizations, I'm sure you work with. But for the person that is not getting their food through that, how do they get connected to know where in, I can pick the example of Pismo Beach, where in Pismo Beach there's a distribution point, what's available for them, and what kind of food are they going to expect will be available to them if they show up to get some?
Well, they can always go on our website. That's okay. Where all of our services and resources are located. There's a calendar. There's information that's broken out between the coastal cities and San Luis Obispo and South County and North County. So you can look up a particular city and find out what's available to you. You can always call us. You know, we have plenty of staff on site that can answer questions like that. We work with many different service providers throughout the county that are also kind of linked into our resources and know about us. And those service providers are also resources for people to go to and ask about free food services.
Yeah. There seems to be also a kind of a view that sometimes the food bank and other organizations providing food for these kind of things are mostly dealing with, can't think of a better word, stale food. You know, things that are out of date. Obviously, well, I would think it would be obvious, and I'm sorry that everybody else doesn't think it's obvious, that your part of your goal is to give nutritional, healthy food that is still very edible to people. So people, my hunch is oftentimes drop things off for you or arrange for you to get something that you then have to look at and say, they're getting rid of this because it's not really consumable anymore, and we have to nicely tell them thank you very much, but we can't take this or we don't have a use for it. Does that kind of thing come up?
It does come up, yeah. And you know, I think if you take on the responsibility of saying we need to help feed people, you might think about what else your responsibility entails there, and what you give people nutritionally really matters. So if you're going to be thinking about how you empower someone's life and maybe whatever circumstances have led them to a place where they need some assistance acquiring food, you're really not helping them if you are just giving them soda, if you're just giving them you know, fatty foods that don't have a lot of nutritional value. Likewise, yes, I think that sometimes folks, though it may be even really good-natured, a food drive comes around, you might just kind of clear out the back of the pantry. And if it looks like my pantry, there could be some stuff that's been sitting there for a while. So really, one of the most effective ways that people can support us is to consider giving money that we can use to source that food. And as Andrea kind of touched on, we have the warehousing space. You know, we're able to front the capital. We have the trucks that can deliver. So we can do a service to everyone by acquiring in bulk product that's really going to be useful at different pantries and feeding sites throughout the county as well.
Yeah. We're talking about the Food Bank Coalition of San Luis Obispo County and basically making sure that, there is nutritional food available for all the members of our community. If you want to be part of this discussion, you can give us a call at 805-781-3875. That's 805-781-3875. This is really, you know, I would classify you as kind of the often unrecognized heroes of the community, because I mentioned, you know, like Meals That Connect, and my, from what I gather, that organizations like that are part of the way that you can channel resources that you have available. We see those organizations, and we may have direct contact with those organizations, but if your truck shows up at 5 o'clock or 6 o'clock in the morning to help deliver whatever Meals That Connect needs today, we may not ever really see what you folks provide. Can you tell us about some other organizations like that, that you work with, and what the outcomes are?
Sure. Well, the broader scope, or the big picture, is that we work with over 77 local nonprofit agencies throughout the county, like Meals That Connect. That 77.
Okay. Can you list a few of them by name?
Because
I can't. I would not even guess that there were that many organizations in the county that would fall into that. But go ahead.
Absolutely. Atascadero Loaves and Fishes. We have Salvation Army in San Luis Obispo, in Arroyo Grande. Help me out, Tim.
Pastor Robles Loaves and Fishes. Mm-hmm. We work with Los Osos People Helping People, Five Cities Meals on Wheels, Napomo Food Basket. So really, it's quite likely that if you're familiar in your neighborhood with an organization that's helping feed folks, it's quite likely that in one way or another we're working with them to help supply them with food, mm-hmm. or with other resources.
Yeah. And the way that it works, these agencies, they actually apply to become a member of the food bank. And once they become a member, they have access to the food in our warehouse. And the vast majority of it is free to them, and they can come and place an order once a week. They can do it once a month. It's all based on what their need is. The agencies either offer the food in a pantry-like setting to clients, or they may actually cook the food and then serve it. And I think it's available to as a service to the community. It's a way that we're developing this network of an emergency service or of food for the whole community. And like you said, it's pretty quiet. It's not a lot of people out there, you know, shouting about it, but they're doing it on a daily basis. They're getting this food to people in need in our community.
Yeah. We have this perception that that we're in an affluent community, that the county is, it's a county of affluent, successful people, and I realize some of the people who think that probably haven't gone out to look and see what it costs to rent an apartment lately, because it's tough to make ends meet for a lot of people. But I'm wondering what you do when you're when you do the program with the letter carriers, which happens once a year. I suspect that they get feedback, and the feedback gets shared with you, that, you know, people just figure, why is this important? Doesn't everybody have a decent meal? So there's a perception of that, or I don't want this to sound sarcastic, and it's important to me that it doesn't. There's this perception, I believe, for a lot of people that those folks that don't have a lot of resources, well, they can just go out and buy peanut butter and feed their kids peanut butter and jelly sandwiches and life will be grand. And I think that perception may be hard for you folks to overcome too, because I suspect somewhere in the back of your personal pantry and maybe in the back of the food warehouse, there indeed is peanut butter. And there's nothing wrong with peanut butter.
We love peanut butter.
But I think I think for a lot of folks, there is this perception of, okay, maybe I'm not doing shrimp. Maybe I'm not barbecuing salmon, but I can always do peanut butter and jelly sandwiches. So there must not be any people who are really hungry in our community. And do you have to address that often?
I think we're kind of always addressing that. As you've indicated, it's kind of a jump-off point. And in America generally, and certainly in a county as affluent as ours, I think that hunger is a little more like insidious than, you know, what you might see on like a World Vision ad or something like that. It's really blatant and in your face when it's a child and like, flies on their face and things like this. And that's real. That's totally real. But it's almost like it can get an easier pass when you can't see it so demonstrably. And so the reality is, you kind of listed some of the numbers here too, but classmates of your kids, are dealing with hunger. They may not get breakfast unless they get it at school. They may not get lunch unless they get it at school. Senior citizen that you pass on the street. There's folks on fixed incomes as everything else rises in price. And so I think it is definitely a fundamental barrier to entry is getting some people to understand just how prevalent it is.
Yeah. In our school system, we've done a very good job, I believe, of making sure that even kids that have no resources to buy a school lunch get a school lunch. Yeah, there's a lot of paperwork involved in it. Some of the kids may feel uncomfortable. I believe the schools have done a pretty good job of making the kids that get a free lunch as invisible to that factor as they can. And some of the schools have done that, and I'm not quite sure what the logistics are. But I think a lot of times if you're buying lunch for your kids, you buy it in a block of the week or a month. So the kids that are not buying lunch but have a script pass or whatever for the program can participate without their friends saying, oh, your mom can't even afford to pay for lunch for you because you're getting a lunch from that standpoint. It's not a secret to a lot of our listeners. I'm married to a middle school teacher, and she said she is surprised at the number of kids that in their family situation, the only meal they get a day that is really a reasonably balanced meal is that lunch program at the school, because it's the participation of kids in that environment becomes an effective way of doing it. But there are a lot of, even with a program that's as successful as you guys are, there's a lot of people out there that maybe they're embarrassed to ask for anything, which means that even though if they show up at one of the city programs that you offer on a weekly or monthly basis, and they know the people around them in that environment there are going to be just like them, they're still embarrassed to be there. And I don't know, is that a topic that comes up for you often when you're dealing with people who call you for the first time asking about, you know, how do I participate in the food bank?
I think it is definitely a topic that comes up. And it's our responsibility to treat everyone with dignity. And the reality would be that most of us are a couple missed paychecks away from serious financial concern. And when you're, you know, tight on money, you need to look for areas to save something. It's a lot cheaper to get fast food than it is to get fresh produce. It's a lot cheaper to make a decision, in your food purchasing choices that may not be as beneficial to you, or it may mean that you literally are just not able to afford as much. So it's kind of our responsibility to treat all of our clients with dignity, and kind of, I think, with that perspective that really we're kidding ourselves if we think that we're so far removed from that kind of need ourselves.
Yeah, I think it's important for people to remember that no one always will have what they want, and no one will hopefully always not have what they need. But it's a discussion we need to continue, which is one reason why we have you here today. Hold on a second. We have, let's see, Anna, you're on the air. We have Anna from San Luis Obispo. Thanks for your patience.
Oh, hi. Thanks a lot. I'm closely involved with the food bank and what wonderful work the food bank does. And there's such a broad aspect of the food bank, not just distributing the food and collecting, but also with Glean Slow. You know, they're a big part of the community that comes in and gets food within the community, you know, picking the leftover fruit or food. And that's a great asset to the contributing to the food bank. Just love that a part of them. And also the volunteers that come in and help, you know. And I personally know a couple people that come individually, get food, and make food for the Prado centers or, you know, the homeless shelter here in San Luis Obispo. So it's such a network. I mean, so Food Bank just brings out many fingers into the community.
Thank you for your comments, Anna. Appreciate it. And thank you for helping out with an organization like this.
Yeah, you're doing a great job, and it's a great asset to the to the SLO community. Also, with the programs that the food bank provides to the schools as well, showing them good nutrition. I know you have programs, right? Melissa goes out there to some of the schools and shows them how to buy good food, right? Is that right?
That's absolutely right. We have a number of
program. Andrea can talk about that.
Okay.
She knows a lot about
I have a feeling we should have had Anna on our behalf today.
No.
Anna, are you a volunteer for the food bank? Is that what you do?
Yeah. Well, I'm closely involved.
Okay. We'll let you be as oblique as you'd like to be, but thank you for the call.
Okay, you're welcome.
Okay, take care.
Have a good day.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Goodbye.
Yeah. She brings up a good point, though, and I'm sorry we haven't talked about it yet. We have a lot of time left to talk. But what kind of opportunities are available for volunteers with your organization? Because my hunch is that in the back of the mind of a lot of people is, okay, this is a production warehouse with trucks moving around and forklifts moving around. So maybe it's not a good environment for volunteers. So I'm wondering how you have opportunities for volunteers.
It's a great environment for volunteers. In fact,
can I volunteer and learn how to drive a forklift?
No, probably not. Okay. But we do actually have volunteers in our warehouse every morning of the week during the weekdays and also on Saturdays. And what volunteers do in our warehouse, they will come in and they'll build orders for our neighborhood food distributions and our farmers market programs. So those orders then, you know, get shipped out on our trucks and delivered later on in the day or the next day. We also have, obviously, you know, from what Anna said, volunteer opportunities through Glean Slow. We encourage people to volunteer with our nutrition education program, which would take them out to distribution sites to deliver nutrition education lessons and offer people samples of recipes and ways to cook food that they might get at our distribution sites. What else?
Well, we have, in addition to what Andrea's kind of described too, we hold, as we mentioned, 80 recurring public food distributions a month. And so that's a great way for folks to consider getting involved too, because there's going to be a food distribution whatever community you live in. And we always can use an extra set of hands to help us, like, actually pass out food to their neighbors in that that area. So even if you're, you know, a little farther away from the warehouse or something like that, and you know, that kind of commute's not feasible for you, we have opportunities pretty much anywhere. We have a volunteer coordinator on staff full time, and she's always posting opportunities online. Similarly, folks are welcome to go to our webpage, and they can actually see a live list of volunteer opportunities they can sign up for. They can do their whole application there. Once they're enrolled, they can actually just start selecting shifts to come to. So there's all kinds of ways to help with the food bank, and we can't get done the work that we do without that volunteer assistance. In 2018, I think we worked with over 4,000 unique volunteers.
About 3,700 volunteers.
3,700 unique volunteers. And
between
a lot
all of
those
our
folks obviously working with us on a recurring basis. So.
Okay, I'm sorry. I was reading a note from our producer, and I'm sorry. Well, I'm going to go on the line here. Okay, is it Bishan?
Bishan.
Okay. Hi, Bishan. You're on the air. Sorry about that. I have trouble with the English language, in spite of what it may sound like. Anyway, Bishan, you're on the air. Tell us what your observations or questions are.
Well, I work for the Paso Robles Housing Authority, and we manage an affordable housing community on the north end of Paso Robles called Oak Park. And we do a lot of things with the food bank, and they're just an amazing organization to work with. But twice a month, a truck arrives at Oak Park with food for 120 families, and it goes not only to our 270 apartments, but we also feed our neighbors and people from all over Paso Robles, and they come from, come from ranches on their way home to somewhere else. And then they provide us a children's farmers market once a month where our children get to come and shop, and it's actually staffed by our youth program called YouthWorks, where we provide job skills training for middle school and high school students. And so it gives them an opportunity to do sort of sales and customer service and provide fresh produce to the local children. And then in the summer, we get breakfast bags once a month that provides nutritional food for our children who aren't getting those school breakfasts during those months. And then during the summer, they also come, people from the food bank come, and they help us teach job skills to our youth in all sorts of things like culinary skills and restaurant skills. And we talk about sanitation, and they cook with our kids, and they tell them about nutritional foods. And so we work with them in a lot of ways, and they're just incredibly patient and gracious and generous with their time and planning.
Yeah, thank you for the call. I think you bring a very important part to this that I will now pester my guests about, and that is the fact that what they do is not just about feeding people, but it's about imparting knowledge that that helps people eat better and have better resources from that standpoint. So thanks for the call.
Okay, thank you.
All right, bye-bye. Yeah, so those are indeed programs that that we may not think we think the schools may do it. We think that the other community organizations, but we figure you guys are just. I don't expect my supermarket to teach me how to cook very much, but I expect them to have all the food I need when I want to go there to buy it. But obviously, you're dealing with a population that, in some cases, just the knowledge of how to more economically or responsibly prepare meals may be very helpful. And the caller's comment about the fact that there's a kids farmers market.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
So we have programs that are specifically designed for certain situations or for certain populations. So we have children's programs, and Bishan mentioned two of those children's programs, one being the children's farmers markets, and she described them really well. They're we partner with organizations like YouthWorks, where they have an after-school program. It might be on-site at a school. We deliver fresh fruits and vegetables once a month to that site and set it up kind of farmer's market style on a big, long table. And then the kids are given fake money called food bank bucks, which they then get to, and then there's signs on each you know, type of produce, saying how much it costs, and they get to role play and pretend like they're at a farmer's market. So it's a neat program because it empowers kids to make choices about what they get to take home to their family. So it is doing two things. It's empowering them to make, you know, healthy choices about their food, and then it's also getting really good quality healthy produce into their family's house. So yeah.
As you explain that right now, what's going on in my mind is it's also giving them the opportunity. They're participating in a program that for a lot of adults is, oh, we're getting something from the community because we're not financially well off. But for the kids, it becomes very recreational and gratifying, as opposed to, oh, my mom's taking me someplace where we get free food.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Yeah. And it's pretty awesome to see a kid get excited about, like, broccoli. You know, I'm 35. It's hard to raise that excitement in me. But
my second favorite vegetable.
Okay. We got to get you out at the farmer's market.
My first favorite is Brussels sprouts.
I Brussels sprouts.
You do? Well, that's, yeah. Everybody tells me I'm in the minority. I buy them in the market, and people look at me like I'm crazy.
But it's exciting to give a kid the chance to learn, to give a kid the chance to bring something home. They really get excited about that. And then, as Andrea mentioned, ultimately, hopefully along with that kind of educational component, you're actually providing a family with some assistance, and they might be able to flex their dollars somewhere else. You know, maybe your cell phone bill is easier to meet or something like that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And that kind of environment builds community. It builds community. Those people are going to see – they're going to see the same people in a positive environment every time they go there, or often when they go there. Mm-hmm. As opposed to feeling like they're showing up at a line to just pick up a basket or a bag, which is nothing wrong with that, but that is for some people can be a self-esteem issue that gets in the way of their wanting to participate. My hunch is, and I don't know if you have statistics for this, but my hunch is you have people in this county that are still hungry because they are too embarrassed to show up and say, I need some help. Mm-hmm. I'm sure that comes up. Those may be the kind of calls you get on your phone line from people who ask questions, but then you try and follow up to give them some help, and it's like, you know, I'll get back to you later. Mm-hmm. And I think that can be a factor too. Mm-hmm. We're talking with folks today from the Food Bank Coalition about how they operate and how they work to make sure we have a healthier, better fed community, because we have a lot of people who go hungry on a regular basis. Let's see. Okay. Bill from Arroyo Grande. Good afternoon.
Hi. I've got a quick question for you. Do you have trouble getting rid of really expensive food that people don't know how to prepare because they've never been able to afford it? Like, for instance, a lobster that's about to go over the hill, but, you know.
We don't see a lot of lobster at the food bank in particular, but that is a great question, and it's one of the reasons that we have a nutrition education program, because we mentioned a program that we operate called Glean Slow. For instance, Glean Slow is capturing local produce that's grown here in our county, and for whatever reason, a farmer either wants to donate it, or the price at the port's not right for them, or whatever, they're going to donate it to us. But you know, if you just show up at a food site and someone's coming through and they're receiving food and you give them something like kohlrabi, they may or may not know what it is. They may or may not know how to cook with it. And, you know, in some estimation, this is a highly desirable, you know, kind of boutique product. So it's really cool that you can pass it along. But to the extent that you're able to educate someone on what it is and how to prepare it, you help. So our nutrition education program will actually go to our public food distribution sites, have recipes prepared that are using ingredients we're distributing that day, and then be able to give recipes printed in English and Spanish to families to take home, so that they can sort of say, oh, I got this collection of food goods today. What are things that I can make that are, you know, pretty easy and healthy with them?
Okay, here's the dumb host question. I don't know what kohlrabi is. What is it?
It kind of looks like like broccoli cauliflower type family, where it's really tightly bunched and stacked on itself, and it kind of grows in tight bunches like
okay,
that, too.
Okay, thank you. Okay, learned something new. Okay.
Really good in a stir fry.
You answered my question, I think. Okay. But you might emphasize to these people that they're getting really rich people's food and enjoy it.
Yeah, Bill, I was surprised you went for the lobster. I was figuring if I was going to get stuck with just shrimp as the topic on there. But
yeah, whatever. Yeah. You know.
Thanks for the call.
Okay, bye.
Bye-bye. Yeah. Yeah. That probably comes up for a lot of people, because some of the things, my hunch is, that you can get involved with are foods that may be very healthy and maybe a nice, unusual commodity, but with a very, very short shelf life. Mm-hmm. And my hunch is things come in the warehouse or things come from sources. It's like, okay, this is really terrific, and how can we get this out to everybody in the next 48 hours, because that's what its shelf life is.
Yeah, absolutely. We have to turn, especially the food that we receive through Grocery Rescue, it really has to be sorted and then distributed within a day or two. So it's a fast process, and we've always got, you know, the proper food handling and food safety on our minds with products like that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Thank you. All righty. Let's see. Charlie, are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
Hi, you're on the air.
Okay. Yeah. Kohlrabi is more like turnip. It's sort of a more of a turnip, except that
that's not making me feel any better.
Yeah. Anyway, what I want to commend KCBX as one of the premiums for those of us that have enough T-shirts, CDs, mugs, and bumper stickers as a way to help support the station and the food local food banks I commend the station for having that as a pledge option.
Well, good. Thank you for saying that. We did not prompt you to call.
No, I know. Well, okay. The other thing is I'm kind of involved in kind of the low end. Our local church, Valley of the Flowers, UCC, in our fellowship book, we have a basket that we collect for the non-perishables, and it goes to the Catholic Charities here in Lompoc. And then that's kind of one way to, I presume, that's an organization you tend to work with.
Yeah, well, there's a separate food bank coalition in Santa Barbara County. And there's one in Monterey County also.
Right. Yeah.
And we work.
Go ahead.
We work definitely closely with Santa Barbara, or Food Bank of Santa Barbara County, who are kind of our partners down there. But we tend to kind of observe, not necessarily county by county split, but kind of a jurisdiction where, you know, each county kind of is covered a little bit separately, at least on the Central Coast.
Yeah.
Well, another opportunity we've had in this area, our local Vons store, during the Thanksgiving season, you can purchase frozen turkeys, hams, or whatever and such, and then they take them to, we'll deliver it. That's one of the options. I used to buy a turkey and then take it to the local food bank, but they say, hey, we'll do that for you. Hmm. So that's an option at least we have in our area.
That's good to hear. That's very good to know. Charlie, thanks for the call.
Okay, we'll catch you later.
Okay, take care.
Right.
Any market in San Luis County doing that, or?
We actually have a turkey drive every year that the food bank, you know, in combination with partners, publicizing it. We have one day where you can donate a frozen turkey at a number of different sites throughout the county, and we also collect donations to purchase more turkeys. And Tim is very familiar with the purchase of turkeys. He's in operations, and every year we actually take the donations and purchase, what was it last year, a couple thousand turkeys.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and wow. We had really our goal would be that we can at least subsidize the cost of that turkey. And again, we're talking about dignity here around the holidays. Imagine not having a turkey, or, you know, the access to it. Some people don't want turkey, but like it's this cultural concept that, that it, it means something that you'd get together and have what's kind of an exorbitant meal there. So yeah, we do a big turkey drive each year. We're at sites throughout the county, and then we will purchase a bunch of turkeys up front and subsidize whatever the cost would be to an agency to acquire them. So we'll try to take all the different nonprofits we mentioned that we work with. We'll send them a survey. How many turkeys ideally would you like to get access to this year? And then start ballparking it to see how many we can bring in.
Let me remind folks, we're talking with folks from the Food Bank Coalition of San Luis Obispo County. That's Andrea Kiesler and Tim Parker. And we're really talking about what they do and how they do it, because as has come up in a bit of this conversation today, a lot of what they do is under the radar. And a lot of people who participate in this work real hard to make sure that everyone who doesn't otherwise have a nutritional meal available to them has some resources. And I'm glad that they are doing what they're doing and glad that they're here talking with us today. Tim, you talked it earlier about a kind of a coalition of food banks that does some, I want to say, bulk purchasing. What is involved with that, and who's in the organization? Is it just food banks? Are there any organizations that do that kind of work that are not considered food banks in our communities?
This would be, I think, definitely the largest example of it. It's a program that's called Farm to Family, and it's administered by an organization called the California Association of Food Banks. So many, but not all, food banks within the state are members of this body that's based in Oakland. And one of their major programs is this Farm to Family program, which I think has been in operation for well over 20 years at this point. It's really scaled. So we figured out that, you know, food banks are kind of often in the waste prevention game by default, because we're catching food that's kind of either at the tail end of its life and trying to get it to folks that need it, or in a lot of cases it's as simple as a large buyer, big corporation, doesn't want an orange that exceeds a certain size or has a certain blemish on it. So farmers for a long time have had a need to find home for imperfect looking produce, and to that end, food banks in California are able to really capitalize too, because we can really affordably access supply of produce that would otherwise be expensive on the primary market.
Mm-hmm. I don't know if it's a national organization or just California, but we've seen it in the last few years pop up in San Luis County, the grocery outlet market program, and I'm wondering whether or not that those kind of programs that. Well, here's the best example I can come up with for you, and which is not a good example, but it's at least quantifiable, is that you will often find cookies or other semi-perishable items, but that they're not that have a shelf life, that maybe they're going to expire the end of June, and they'll end up in that environment in April or May because a distributor someplace decided they couldn't get them out on the shelf soon enough. My hunch is that that would be the kind of thing, as I realize you'd probably like to stay away from cookies, but that was the example I could come up with, because for me it's mostly about cookies or ice cream. Sorry, and the ice cream's perishable. But whether or not that type of commercial marketing program has helped the food banks, or has it cut part of your chain of available commodities out of the mix?
I think the reality is that we live in a wealthy country that has a very wasteful food supply and distribution chain. And that's the whole reason that there would be a market imperative to have a chain like a grocery outlet or some other kind of, discount opportunity. So really, I think it's more about connecting the dots. It's figuring out how, as a society, we actually just more effectively catch that stuff that's at the end of the chain, or more intentionally carve it out and then route it to people that need it. There's not any reason that we should have, the problems with hunger that we have, given the supply that we have. So, doesn't really, I don't think, limit our access to food having an organization like that. In fact, grocery outlets are amongst our donors here in the county. So even there where they're, capturing what's kind of made it through other parts of the food supply chain, they're still not able to turn it all over. And so we work with them to capture their rescues too.
Yeah, and my hunch is you may also find that there are parts of your client base that maybe have they have a better opportunity to purchase some things they want at an environment like that. So some food becomes more affordable for them on a regular basis. I think that's a factor also. Mm-hmm. It's how long has the food bank been around?
This is our 30th year.
Been around for a long time. Mm-hmm. It's not going anywhere. We'd like you to all be out of business.
That's true.
But the reality is it's not going to happen. So it's one of those things that we have to just accept as part of our society. At least we can be pleased that you're doing what you're doing. One of our callers indeed talked about the fact that there's a program at KCBX that you can, instead of getting a pledge premium, you can commit money to the food bank, and that's something that's been done here. And I'm glad he mentioned it. I didn't want anybody to feel like I was trying to just to pander to folks about those donations. But I appreciate Charlie mentioning that as a factor. I think that one of the things that still comes to mind for me is I'm wondering what you do or can do, maybe to even expand the ability for people to feel less self-conscious about coming to you or contacting you for assistance and not feel like it's an embarrassment that's difficult to deal with.
Well, I think Tim spoke about this earlier. I would add to what he said that we try to serve without judgment also. I think when people come to us, you know, our staff is well-trained to treat everybody who comes to us without judgment, with dignity. And I think that's true for all of our agency partners too, you know. And that's really an important part of all of this. Like Tim said, we're all capable of, you know, being in that situation at some point in our life of needing something, and it's a vulnerable situation, and we need to treat people without judgment and with dignity when they come for help.
And I think the way you verbalize that will give people an understanding that they will be treated that way when they come to you, and that's mm-hmm. good. And as I do every program, and that is try and do my best to get out of the way for a few minutes. So, Andrea, why don't I start with you? What do you think we want to make sure that people don't forget about having listened today?
Well, I think we should keep in mind that even though this isn't a visible, you know, issue necessarily in our community, 1 in 6 community members in San Luis Obispo County are food insecure each year. 20% are seniors, 40% are children. The food bank operates countywide, and we are a people-powered organization. We have 3,700 volunteers that help us in our warehouse and out in the community, and we couldn't provide the services that we provide to our community without those people helping us do it. And I think, in general, food is a really basic need. It's a connector, you know. When you don't have it, it's isolating and scary, and you feel it physically. And so I think we need to do everything in our power to make sure that everyone in our community has access to nutritious food, and that's what the food bank's doing.
Well put. Thank you. Tim.
Andrea, I think, did a great job probably covering a lot of the ground I would, but I would just sort of highlight again the word coalition in our name. We're the Food Bank Coalition of San Luis Obispo County, and that is because it doesn't get done with one warehouse. We need this this interconnectivity that we have where, you know, we're a rural county. We're 3,300 square miles roughly, right? And it's really easy to be in San Luis Obispo and not know really what's going on in Paso Robles, not know what's going on in Napomo or wherever it is. And that doesn't mean that the need isn't there. So the food bank, I think, is best thought of as kind of that hub to help serve all the spokes. But we don't cover all that ground ourselves. You know, our trucks are driving around all the time, as you mentioned. But it's all of these agencies that are staffed with volunteers that are doing this because they care also. And so to that end, I'd encourage you to either go to our website and look for ways to volunteer, or just reach out within your community and find opportunities to do it there. But it really is that kind of a collaboration that that meets this need.
Okay. So what's the easiest way for anyone to find you if they want to be a volunteer?
Go to our website, www.slowfoodbank.org. You can also find out all kinds of information on our website beyond just volunteering. But
yeah. Mm-hmm. And I remind people often is that you don't have to necessarily remember the actual website. If you Google one third of the name of anything, it'll show up these days. Thank you, Google. That's not a paid ad anyway, but I appreciate that. Thank you for being with us today. I appreciate it. Chris Kington Barker will be with you next week, and she is doing an interesting program. She's doing a program on the art of dying well, and that is indeed the name of the program next week, because I need to share with you that she's going to have as her guest Katie Butler, who is an award-winning science journalist and author of two New York Times bestsellers, Knocking on Heaven's Door and The Art of Dying Well. They will be discussing how to prepare for a good end to one's life. I mean this seriously, not sarcastically. None of us get out of here alive, and nobody has figured immortality out yet. So when Chris Kington can talk about death and talk with a guest like Katie Butler, it'll be a fascinating program. I'm looking forward to hearing it also. So Chris will be with you next week, and I'll be back with you in 2 weeks. Central Coast Voices, as I've told you before, is a production of Action for Healthy Communities, a project of the Community Foundation of San Luis Obispo County, along with KCBX. You can see our report on the status of things going on in the county at actionslo.org. That's actionslo.org. I want to thank Joan Gellert Sargent for her ongoing underwriting of this program. You can reach us at voices@kcbx.org or 805-543-2323. And thank you again today to my guests, Andrea Kessler, pardon me, I botch up names all the time, I apologize, and Tim Parker. This has been Central Coast Voices. Thank you for joining us today.